Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 14th, and today's session is entitled, Can Poetry Usurp the Function of Religion in Our Lives? Presented by Kathy Schwinn, number SCK-2006-08. Let's listen in.
Thanks to all of you for coming. My name is Kata Schwain, and when I am not here, I live in Iowa City, where I've just finished doing graduate work at the Iowa Writers' Workshop, studying creative writing, and next year I will be teaching at Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. So that's sort of my mini brief bio. So today we're going to talk about a poem called The Idea of Order at Key West by Wallace Stevens. Has anybody read it before? Yes, okay, wonderful. Has anybody read anything by Wallace Stevens before? Yes, name familiar, maybe? Okay, fabulous.
Yeah, right.
We hope no, maybe Wallace Stevens. So just sort of, I think that this poem, the reason that I wanted to discuss it all with you is because it's hard. It's a hard poem, and it's hard to understand everything that's going on in it. And at some level, I think it's sort of impossible. But it also makes it a great one to discuss. But I wanted to start out by just reading the poem to you. And I want you to close your eyes if that helps you to listen better. If it's better if your eyes are open, that's fine too. But just as I read it out loud, I want you to not worry about content at all. Don't worry about like what's making sense or not making sense. Try to just listen to the sound of the thing and things to sort of be attuned to, just things like what words are maybe repeated that you hear coming back to you, or even like one word that's only mentioned once but it jumps out for you. And thinking about what is the rhythm of the piece? Is this like, are you feeling it in sort of short staccato bursts? Is it feeling like it's long, lingering lines? Just how is it feeling to you? Are there certain sounds that are getting repeated over and over again? Is this something that has a lot of consonants? Is this something that has sort of a lot of vowel sounds? Just things like that, just kind of, and just intuitive things. Does that make sense? Just listening? Not worrying about what it means. That's the main thing. Because we'll worry about that in about 5 minutes. And then you'll never want to do that again. You should catch up. I'm just going to read through the poem once.
Okay.
People are just paying attention to how it sounds to them, not to anything of what it means. Okay, so the idea of order at Key West. She sang beyond the genius of the sea. The water never formed to mind or voice, like a body, holy body, fluttering its empty sleeves. And yet its mimic motion made constant cry, caused constantly a cry that was not ours, although we understood, inhuman, of the veritable ocean. The sea was not a mask. No more was she. The song and water were not medleyed sound, even if what she sang was what she heard, since what she sang was uttered word by word. It may be that in all her phrases stirred the grinding water and the gasping wind, but it was she and not the sea we heard. For she was the maker of the song she sang. The ever-hooded, tragic-gestured sea was merely a place by which she walked to sing. I'm just pausing my moment. I want you to speak through. No, I'm just reading through and we're just seeing how it sounds to us and just responding to that. I'm going to go back a little bit. For she was the maker of the song she sang. The ever-hooded, tragic-gestured sea was merely a place by which she walked to sing. Whose spirit is this, we said, because we knew it was the spirit that we sought and knew that we should ask this often as she sang. If it was only the dark voice of the sea that rose, or even colored by many waves, if it was only the outer voice of sky and cloud, of the sunken coral water-walled, However clear it would have been deep air, the heaving speech of air, a summer sound repeated in a summer without end and sound alone. But it was more than that, more even than her voice and ours, among the meaningless plungings of water and the wind, theatrical distances, bronze shadows heaped on high horizons, mountainous atmospheres of sky and sea. It was her voice that made the sky acutest at its vanishing. She measured to the hour its solitude. She was the single artificer of the world in which she sang. And when she sang, the sea, whatever self it had, became the self that was her song, for she was the maker. Then we, as we beheld her striding there alone, knew that there never was a world for her except the one she sang and singing made. Ramon Fernandez, tell me, if you know, why, when the singing ended and we turned toward the town, tell why the glassy lights, the lights in the fishing boats at anchor there, as the night descended, tilting in the air, mastered the night and portioned out the sea, fixing emblazoned zones and fiery poles, arranging, deepening, enchanting night. Oh, blessed rage for order, pale Ramon, the maker's rage to order words of the sea, words of the fragrant portals, dimly starred, and of ourselves and of our origins, in ghostlier demarcations, keener sounds. Okay, so just from hearing it, were there words, rhythms, sounds that, what did you hear?
The water and the sea.
Water, sea. Okay, wait, so the words water and sea, what else? Somebody else said?
The singer and the maker of your song.
Singer?
Alliteration.
Alliteration, great. Anything that you can any sounds that you can remember being alliterated?
S and W.
S and W, great.
And then T at the end.
T at the end.
I think C as well.
And C at the beginning, yeah, great. Gosh, you guys are sharp. Well listened to. What else? Somebody said wait.
You just about hear the rhythm of the wave.
Okay, wonderful. Anything else?
Creation.
Creation. Okay. The word or just...
No, the process.
The sense of creation. Okay.
The sense of creation.
Sense of creation. Okay, that's getting a little bit more into content.
I'm sorry.
No, it's hard to talk about sound without talking about content.
At the end, the city lights and the darkness and the lights, civilization or something coming in, juxtaposed.
Okay. And I think it's interesting, though you're using the words about civilization stuff, but we hear it too because you've gotten so much she and sang and all of that, and then you get light, night, dark, you get all of those T, D, all of that sounds, the consonant sounds sound more civilized to us, I think is what you're getting at.
Right.
And that the singer and the sea and the waves... It sounds more like being outside of civilization. It sounds more like being by the ocean, right? Yeah.
No, hardness as opposed to softness.
Hardness as opposed to softness. Great. Anything else? Okay. What I'd like to do next, approaching this poem a little bit differently today, just for lots of different reasons. What I want you to do now is read through it just on your own. And if you have a pen, you can underline. If you don't, there's extra writing pencils up here, or you can just keep it in your head. I just want you to pick out one. It could be a sentence, it could be a line, it could be a phrase, it could be a word, something that you just like and it speaks to you in the poem. That's all. Do you have more writing utensils?
Yeah, just not write, but like mark.
Yeah. Does that make sense? You don't have to be able to explain it, just something that speaks to you, and I just want to give everybody a chance to see the poem and read it to themselves. So
was the poet?
Oh, I'm sorry, I sort of mentioned at the beginning, but it's Wallace Stevens.
Thank you.
one line or a phrase or a sentence that they've marked? Is there anyone who doesn't know? So now what we're going to do is just go around the room, go this way, and then down this row, and then back around down this row. And I just want you to simply read whatever you chose, and just be listening, sort of a way of hearing the poem again, just based on what people have sort of chosen. Does that make sense?
Single artificer of the world in which she sang.
The outer voice of sky and cloud.
The water never formed to mind or voice. And we'll just add at the end, on the other hand, the request to rage for order, in other words.
For she was the maker of the song she sang.
It was her voice that made the sky the cutest in the Spanish.
But it was she and not the sea we heard.
The maker's rage to order words of the sea.
She was a single artificer of the world in which she sang.
It may be that in all her phrases stirred the grinding water and the gasping wind.
That was not ours, although we understood.
Like a body, holy body.
O blessed rich for order found.
The ever-hooded, tragic gestured sea was merely a place by which she walked to sing.
We knew it was the spirit that we sought and knew that we should ask this often.
Wonderful. Okay. I'm going to give you this. If we have time to get to it at the end, I do want to get to sort of an interesting debate. Critics, like, love to deal with this poem because it can be treated so philosophically. And it's very easy to get into a very, very philosophical discussion in which you feel like you don't actually know anything about anything, which is, trust me. But that is why I wanted to start out hearing it, because you guys have already made sense just from hearing it about what the poem is about, and just from picking phrases that for whatever reason are clear and are meaningful to you. So just knowing that that's there as we go through the rest of this. So two critics, I think in some ways these could be opposite poles depending on how you argued it. Janet McCann said, if poetry is to usurp the function of religion, which is something that Wallace Stevens was sort of tending towards, he really struggled, but for him, religion just couldn't quite give him everything that he needed. Though, if somebody else is a Wallace Stevens expert and can better describe it, go for it. But if poetry is to usurp the function of religion, there must be a theodicy for it. Such can be found in the idea of order at Key West. So theodicy sort of being the, and again, if there's religious scholars that want to jump in here, theodicy sort of being explanations of good and evil in the world, especially evil. And so basically, if poetry is going to take on the function of religion, poetry also better be able to explain good and evil in the world. And this person saying this poem can do it. So
what theodicy, how
What does the artist
mean? I was talking to a PhD this morning about that, and even she was like, and my understanding is that a theodicy is a religious sort of explanation for good and evil in the world. Who can somebody else add more to it?
Or from this poem it seems, or with or without God, and with or without.
With or without God, yes. But I'm thinking like we all experience evil or bad things, and we all experience moments of goodness. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not going to attribute some of those things to the presence of God in certain ways, we need to figure out who or what or how to
separate
them, and that somehow this poem is doing that. I'm just kind of throwing some stuff at you before we get into the poem. Then Joseph Carroll says, there is a spiritual presence distinct from yet somehow diffused through all the concrete elements in the scene that is being described. So that somehow there's a spiritual presence imbued throughout this, which is pretty different, I think, than what Janet McCann's saying, at least from the first glance, right? Mm-hmm. So the question becomes sort of, in simpler terms, is this poem an argument for the replacement of art or poetry to replace religion, or is it clear from this poem that the two are sort of inseparable and that spirit is somehow diffused through all of this, even if the poet is trying to get away from it? Does that make sense? We'll return to that at the end. That's just a bit of it. Then I'm going to give you one quote by Wallace, or somebody talking about Wallace Stevens. Stevens was interested in the ambiguity of ideas. Ambiguity for Stevens was very different than intentional obscuring. Okay, sometimes people feel like poets are intentionally obscuring things. No, ambiguity is different. James Loganbat writes, Stevens believed that we cannot live without ideas of order. We cannot live without ideas of order. But he understood that we could not talk about order without raising the specter of disorder, that any idea of order that did not leave space for its own disillusion could not be tolerated. I'm going to read that last part again. That any idea of order, and we can think of that in this poem also in terms of law and rigid things, that did not leave space for its own disillusion could not be tolerated. You can interpret that in a lot of different ways. I'm giving you all this because this poem has such ambiguity in it. It's sort of all about ambiguity. And I want to stress as we go through that I think the part of this poem is enjoying that ambiguity and not trying to get it all figured out and sorted out. So as we go through, we'll like read a sentence and try to sort out maybe what he's talking about, but part of it is sometimes we just won't. and trying to find what are the moments where what he's saying seems very clear, where are moments of clarity, and where are moments where it seems like things are purposefully not quite as clear. Does that make sense? So like, let's just start with that first line. She's saying, well, first of all, the idea of order at Key West, where are we?
Florida.
So we're literally near the ocean.
I love that poem. I mean that the title.
Yeah, why?
Well, it's just the idea
of yes. order. Yes.
And then Key is such a
loaded
word.
Yeah, yeah.
I just kind of got stuck on that for a while.
Yes, and I think it's great to bring up that already we're dealing with layers of things. It's not like order at Key West. You know, it's the idea of order at Key West. So already we're dealing with the idea of the thing itself and of a specific place. But that's great, yeah. Okay, so we get, she sang beyond the genius of the sea. What questions does that raise for you immediately?
Well, why did
who is she? Right.
And why did he choose the word genius?
Genius? Yeah, what does genius of the sea mean? Mm-hmm. Anyone want to take a...
Well, life. Life is created in the sea, if you think
okay.
that way.
Okay.
But she's saying beyond it.
Yeah. I mean, if we forget genius for a second, she's saying beyond the sea. What could that mean? I mean, what are...
Farther.
So she's... That she could physically be... beyond the sea.
Or that her voice reached beyond.
Or that her voice is reaching beyond the sea. Okay, so already there's a difference between the person who's singing the song and the song itself. You know, or what else?
I was thinking that she was transcendent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Beyond.
More.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that the genius of the sea might be the very physical earth, and she's somehow, the song is transcending that. Sort of that.
Yeah. It's funny because go ahead, sir. I was thinking that the transcendentalist probably wouldn't like this poem because it feels like it's so act versus occurrence. I mean, the sea is occurring, and that's its genius in and of itself, tides and everything. But the act she was doing was just beyond it. Was beyond the genius of the sea.
Yeah.
Saying a lot. I mean, yeah, there's the ambiguity.
Right.
The genius of the sea is, it's hard to beat.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, okay, all that we know in a concrete way is that there's a she and she's singing. And probably she's maybe near the ocean. That's all we really know at this point, okay? Then we get the next six lines are a single sentence. Let me just read through it for you, and then I'd like somebody to just tell me what was said there. Okay. The water never formed to mind or voice, like a body wholly body, fluttering its empty sleeves, and yet its mimic motion made constant cry, caused constantly a cry that was not ours, although we understood in human of the veritable ocean. Anybody want to try to summarize that?
Well, when I read it at first, I thought she was the ocean itself. So that was a little tricky. And then I changed my mind later, but the water never formed. So the she, I thought the water was referring to the she. So I think
we can assume that the she and the sea
are different.
Mm-hmm. So with that in mind.
Yeah.
I was thinking of she as kind of a, not God, but a mother nature. I guess maybe because it used the feminine.
Okay.
And I thought this first part, she's the genius of the sea. I took as the complexity of the sea, the life getting into the sea, and everything starting from the sea. And mother nature is kind of beyond
above
that.
It. Okay. No, I think that's great because it brings up the question of who is this she? And I think sort of we have nature. I mean, words like maker and artificer are used, like maker of the song, maker. So the question of who, and any other thoughts for who the she could be? Yeah, Anna.
I took it as creation God.
Oh, so you took her as God. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just took it literally that it was
a woman.
That a woman, this guy kind of, these two guys that we find at the end, just kind of almost like happening upon something.
Yes. And I think in a very, like, we sort of have to take that in a very literal way, that it's two guys watching at some point a woman near the sea who's singing. You know, at some point there is that literal level. But we get, the water never formed to mind or voice. So somehow we're getting a separation here, right, between the water on the one hand... and mind and voice, and she's connected to the voice, right? The song.
I was a little bit like, I thought it was ambiguous there as to whether mind and voice are nouns or verbs.
Oh. Huh, interesting, great. So already, so So one method he's using of ambiguity is making it unclear whether something is a noun or a verb, playing with
because
that.
Because on one hand, it's like saying that the water is completely inanimate, or like doesn't have a mind, doesn't have a voice. But on the other hand, it's the opposite, that it never decided to care, and never decided to voice its opinion.
Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. And then we get this image of like a body, holy body, fluttering its empty sleeves. Now, if a body is holy body...
I thought it was just the, you know, the trunk part.
Okay.
Not the arms or the legs.
Okay, so that only part of the body is whole.
Dismembered.
Okay. How do other people... I mean, superficially, those images seem fairly opposite, right? That if a body is wholly body, then the sleeves shouldn't be empty because the body should be in the sleeves, right?
Unless the body is just a sleeve for something that's
inside of it. Great.
For me, that line just gave me this phenomenal visual image.
Yeah.
You know? So I didn't really think a lot about what it meant, but just the way that something, the way that a body with empty sleeves would be in the water was just beautiful.
Yes, great. So at some level, there's just what it gives to us, the sense of fluttering,
the
empty
sleeves. But heaviness, too.
Yes.
So it's a holy body, so there's weight to it, like a weight and lightness both.
At the same, so that sort of ambiguity we're having to hold, good.
And then, of course, when we just listened to it, we couldn't tell if it was body, holy body, or body,
holy body.
Yeah.
Great, so up here with sound.
I thought the whole passage was an image that he was trying to describe, recreate the sea.
Yeah, me too.
You
okay.
know, the sound of the sea, the motion of the sea.
Yep, because then we get into that, don't we?
What did the sea look like? It looked like this body, you know, because the sea would be solid, but then the waves lapping are like the
sleeves. Great.
Sleeve flutter.
Yep. Well, definitely... we have to read it as the water is like a body, holy body, fluttering its empty sleeves. So that's great. And so we get the visual image first, and then we get, and yet its mimic motion, and here's we get this, start getting the alliteration, yet its mimic motion made constant cry, caused constantly a cry that was not ours, although we understood, inhuman of the veritable ocean. And here things get confusing because the inhuman of the veritable ocean, based on the syntax of that sentence, should refer to ours.
Yes.
It was not ours.
Right.
But we know that that's not really what the poet is referring to. The poet wants to refer to the water, and yet the syntax points it to us. So the inhumanness is suddenly both the sea and us at the same time, which is...
And I still think of her, too.
And her. Great, because she's there. But what else about that? Caused constantly a cry that was not ours, although we understood. What other differentiations are we making here? If the voice and the she has a song, what does the she have?
A mimic.
A mimic?
Yeah, it's a mimic.
Mimic motion, right?
And
what else?
Is the cry then?
Right? And cry, yeah. Yeah. Sort of song versus cry that was not ours, although we understood. So understandable, but somehow not possessable. I'm going to keep going, but we can just. Okay. The sea was not a mask, no more was she. Anybody want to say anything about that?
They're just both authentic. They're just
okay.
Both what they are at their core.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. The song and water were not meddling sound. Okay, so they're not meddling together. They're not intertwined. We're not hearing one song or one sound that's both of them together. They're separate. The song and the water were not medley sound, even if what she sang was what she heard. So you can't call it together, even if what she was singing, even if like her voice was just imitating the waves themselves. It's still separate. These are still separate things. And yet, if in her voice, the sea is present. I mean, it's very interesting, right? We're trying to draw all these lines that are sort of inescapable. Because if you're listening, I mean, just at a very obvious level, sort of, if you're listening to someone sing next to the ocean, what are you hearing?
Both.
You're hearing both of them at once. And so part of this is that actual action of, like, if you're sitting there and you're trying to differentiate, when is it her and when is it the waves and how do we tell those apart, you know? Since what she sang was uttered word by word. Which, if she's going to use language, that makes it impossible for her to completely imitate the sea, right? She's bound by language. Anybody else want to say anything about those?
Does it kind of call back to the made constant cry, caused constant made cry? The reason why those are separated, because the made constant cry, the ocean made constant cry, but also caused a cry.
Okay, so it's causing
her.
Yes. So we get sort, there's sort of this cyclical, that's great though, the difference between the made and caused. Wonderful. And I love in this stanza too that we get heard, word, stirred. Heard again then. So all of a sudden we get all these heavy rhyming sounds that are trying to link things together. You know, rhymes try to do that. It may be that in all her phrases stirred the grinding water and the gasping wind. What does that mean?
Well, it sounds like she's affecting the sea as much as it's affecting her.
Well, in all her, what's in all her phrases though?
The words she's speaking. What she's speaking.
Oh, I see how you. Oh, interesting. That is very interesting because you could read that as her phrases stirring the grinding water and the gasping wind, or that in her phrases the grinding water and the gasping wind were stirring, which is how I've always read it, but I guess you could go. How did other people?
Yes, I thought that the water and the wind were included in her phrases.
In her phrases. Other people? At any rate, again, it's emphasizing the difference, the inability to sort of separate and yet to separate at the same time. But it was she and not the sea we heard. But what happened in stanza one? What were they listening to?
The water.
The sea. We just went through a standalone description of what the sea sounded like and looked like. And now we get, but it was she and not the sea we heard.
Maybe you choose what you're going to hear.
Okay. So that, this is great. So the other thing that we have here is the listener, who perhaps gets to make a choice about how the differentiation occurs. Okay, that's great. For she was the maker of the song she sang. What does that bring up?
It's nothing that they've ever heard before.
Okay. So it's a little bit foreign. And that, unlike the sea, that it's emphasizing, and this would probably be going more towards this, that she is in control of the thing that she is making. She is the maker. No one else is making this for her. She is the maker of it.
Very creatively.
Very creatively, but that she has free will over the song. She is the creator. She is the maker. The ever-hooded, tragic-gestured sea was merely a place by which she walked to sing. What's that sort of emphasizing? What does that bring out?
Her individuality.
Her individuality, right. The sea isn't affecting her song. She just happens to be walking along next to it. It's trying. All of a sudden now we're pushing the two away. We've first we were met like the meddling and the sound. We just got that the grinding water and the gasping wind were in all her phrases, and now we have, nope, the sea was just this kind of thing that she was walking next to. There it was. And it's interesting, too, I think, that we get, it was merely a place by which she walked to sing, and yet in the line before we get this ever-hooded, tragic gestured sea, which is, has a lot of personification in it, right? That doesn't make the sea seem like it's merely a sea. It makes it seem like it's the ever-hooded, tragic, gestured, mythic sea. And yet, the next line is, what's merely a place? It's not. And then this interesting part, I think. Whose spirit is this, we said, because we knew it was the spirit that we sought and knew that we should ask this often as she sang. Talk about that.
First time you hear we.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And yeah. What she said.
It's the first time we hear we.
And also the mention of the spirit.
The spirit, yeah.
That's, I mean, they're hearing the song and they're hearing the sea, but all of a sudden they're going deeper.
Yes.
It's, we knew it was the spirit that we sought.
Yes.
I mean, we didn't care about the words, we didn't care about the sounds. We wanted to get into the heart, into the soul.
Right. And it becomes, I think that's great, it becomes very tricky because we sort of have this triangle set up already in which we've got water, sea over here, which is sort of, this is like the nature element, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have over here the art, right? Or artifice, as it were, the thing that is made, the thing that humans create. We have its relationship to nature, and then we have the listener, right? The person who's going to look at it and think about it and make connections between these things. And then we get spirit thrown in there. That's amazing for doing that, right? So where does spirit go? Yeah, Jeannie.
Well, since we, some of us, are looking at this through the lens of our own Christianity.
Yes.
That does affect how we read this poem.
Right.
And since I believe that all good literature, no matter what it is, you are searching for the ultimate questions because you're searching about who you are in the universe, and how the universe is, and is there a God, and who we are in connection with that, and the story of that, and the story of how that connects with who we are. This is the sentence that I picked out. So, of course, it's important to me. We knew it was the spirit that we sought. I think that's the journey of our lives, is that we're asking who spirit is in connection with us, or at least I'll say
yes. Yes.
But I don't know if that's
no, I think. Anybody, does anybody want to pay? I think that, I mean, my impulse is to read it the same way when an intending he says, well, Stevens, you know, was sort of in this process of rejecting religion. To me, it seems like, well, like you're saying, you know, we get spirit in here, and we knew it was the spirit that we sought, and that we should ask this often. That we, I mean, that seems to speak so very specifically to what we do in faith, that we're constantly involved in the asking. Okay, but does anybody want to try to go the other route and argue against that?
I'll go the other route and say, even when you're not a person of faith,
yeah,
you're still asking those questions, because you're still trying to figure out who you are, even though you may not have the answers that we think we have, you're still asking the questions.
You're still asking the same questions.
Yeah,
no matter what your question,
because it's human nature to know that.
Okay.
Even if it's not, besides being Christian nature.
Okay.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah, I think people in all kinds of places are also, are, you know, I agree, whether it's in the form of Christianity, because, you know, as you look back through the history of religions, people are always searching for that.
I agree that you could have different people. Whose spirit is this? We said, because we knew it was the spirit that we saw. So we think we have the answer, whether it's God or somebody else. We know that we should ask this often. Keep asking. We know we're going to ask anyway.
Okay, so that there's knowledge in there that maybe isn't what we're as comfortable. I mean, sort of always like to leave things open and don't like to say, I I think a lot of times, if we're part of the Christian faith, that we always know this for sure. That's always dangerous language. And yet, here we get it twice, and it's the last word of both of those lines. And like you're saying, it turns that line into, whose spirit is this? We said, because we knew. I mean, that's sort of like the exact opposite.
We know, but we're still asking.
We know, but we're still going to ask.
Prove ourselves right.
That was interesting, but also, I think at the beginning I was confused about what the water and she, and I think they're really closely connected.
Yes.
And as you go farther, she becomes divided from the sea. And then here, for the first time, we have a we, which is then divided from the sea, from her, which was originally part of the sea and then divided from the sea. And I see a division happening, okay, where... Yes, there is a searching for something that we want to know, but maybe before there was a division, we were part of it.
Okay, so there's been some, that spirit is more involved in with these things being joined somehow?
I don't know.
That we're experiencing division in the poem and that that's...
I see in the wording of the poem a division happening.
Okay.
Between the sea... and then we, and then the spirit.
Okay, I think that's great. Let's, as we keep reading it, try to see if those things are staying divided or if they're coming back together or how those arrangements are happening, because I think that's a good thing to watch out for. If it was only the dark voice of the sea that rose, or even colored by many waves, if it was only the outer voice of sky and cloud, of the sunken coral water-walled, however clear, it would have been deep air, the heaving speech of air, a summer sound, repeated in a summer without end, and sound alone. Holy cow, we've gone in lots of circles in that one, haven't we? Like, whoo! Okay, so, to begin unpacking that, we'll try to go quickly here. What's the it? If it gets repeated there twice. What is it?
The voice.
The song.
Is it the voice? The song?
It's the spirit? The combination of the voice and the singing.
Okay, well, this becomes very complex, though, because we have an entire however many lines that all relies on it, and yet you can't quite determine what it is, though I think based on what's come before... that we've got to go with spirit. It was the spirit, right? We've just been talking about spirit. So, but I want to point out that at the end of that stanza, we then have the... I'm skipping, I know. We'll come back. We get... It was her voice that made the sky acutest at its vanishing. Now, lots of people like to talk about that line as though the it is referring to the sky, right? It was the sky that made... Is that right? Is that how I want to say that? It was the sky that made her voice acutest at its vanishing. But if we're reading the entire stanza before as the it referring to spirit, then we get to that, and then is it spirit was her voice that made the sky acutest at its vanishing?
I keep thinking of it as the voice.
Just
as a separate voice.
Okay. The one that she's... Her song, you mean?
Is it the second part of that?
No! This is why I want to repeat that, like, that I think the ambiguities here are to be enjoyed and to, like, not stress us out, but yes.
The second part says it was more than that.
But it was more than that, yes.
And I think when you read through the first yes, if you leave yourself open to the question and ask yourself what it was, mm-hmm. it kind of helps you answer the second part.
Okay. It was more than that.
Isn't setting on almost of a three? I mean, it really feels like it's setting on three levels. It's setting on the spirit level, the human level, and nature.
Okay.
It feels like it's three levels, and it was more than that. But and just play spirit. But the spirit of it was more than that. More than her voice or ours.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Among all this other stuff, but then when I say, but it was her voice that made the sky acute and said it's vanishing. So then we switch back to the, but still the voice it's like a hierarchy almost. But still, it was her voice that made the sky so beautiful, but still the voice came from the spirit. We're still searching for the spirit of the whole thing.
But it's read oftentimes as a shift into, like before it says, but it was more than that. And I think at that point we're still, like you're saying, into spirit. Spirit was more than that, more than her voice and ours. But then a shift back to, no, the thing that made the sky acutest, it's vanishing. The sky that, and in that sense, you know, made us acutest at its vanishing, you know, that gave us this sense of, you know, when you see a sunset of that having power and impact is her voice. So the sense that it's art that's going to make us feel these things the most deeply. Like, that's how it's read a lot of the time. But if you've been reading the it in the whole stanza before as spirit, do you think? I mean, your head just gets nodded, but how do other people read
it?
It's turning tonight, okay?
Yes, because at the end, he talks about turning around and seeing the flashing lights.
Okay, and we're getting shadows here. That's great. Mm-hmm. So we're also, amongst all this, experiencing the transition from day to night. Okay, great. And there's a hand. Anne, were you going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say that for me, it could possibly be like a question.
Yeah.
Okay.
The issue.
Okay.
Of order.
The idea of order. Okay.
Well, he just asked a question in the preceding paragraph.
And that,
whose spirit is this? We know, but if it was just this, it might be easy. But,
right.
So it is just a meaning.
The answer to the
issue,
question.
The issue, if it was just this, it was just this.
I don't see it as the answer, I see it as the question.
Yeah.
So it's continuing to ask the question,
yes.
To further the question.
Yes.
Okay, great. The whose spirit is this is also interesting, too, because it's not what spirit is. It's not a question about the spirit. It's a question about who it belongs to. Who does this spirit belong to? Is this our spirit? Is this God's spirit? Is this art spirit? What is this? The sense of spirit that's imbued, we think of that as religious, but what if it's, you know, it's coming from a different place? It's all, yeah. Okay, oh my gosh. So we have 5 minutes, so what we're going to okay. Let's just try to go through this as we can here. Okay. It was her voice made the sky acutest at its vanishing. She measured to the hour its solitude. She was the single artificer of the world in which she sang. So somehow she is the creator of the world in which she's singing. That somehow that act of art, of song, or language is creating the world for her that she is going to inhabit. That somehow the relationship, I mean, here's one way to read it, relationship between our the creativity when we're involved in creating art, when we're participating in that, that is changing for us the world that we step out and inhabit. We can't separate those things. If you're creating, and creating I would use on a large scale, I mean, in terms of praying, I would put praying in there too. When you're involved in that, that can't be separate from your experience of leaving that space and going outside. You've changed the world that you inhabit by that act, by how you witness what's outside. Does that make sense? Which is a powerful. I'm just gonna kind of power through here 3 minutes of the world in which she sang, and when she sang. The sea, whatever self it had, became the self that was her song, for she was the maker. So somehow the sea here, the argument here being that the sea is adopting her song as its own self, right? So we're getting the voice is coming back here, right? It went over first, and now it's coming back. Then we, as we beheld her striding there alone, knew that there never was a world for her except the one she sang and singing made.
That's troublesome to me.
Yes. Why?
Well, because the
There is still water there.
There's still water outside of her song, yeah. Right? But for her, somehow, you know, she's not able to put those together. Like, what is this state of her or ourselves if we can't somehow figure out a way to link these two? If the only world you have is the one that's over here, it's limited, right?
But couldn't that also be like fate?
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, say more.
Well, just that there's no other path she could have taken than creating that world.
Okay.
You know what
I mean?
Like, okay. I don't know.
So we're, in some ways, we're limited by our understanding of the world, by our own song, by what we create, by what we do, that changes how we look at the world. So we're kind of limited by that, too. It can be freeing in how we view the world, and it can be limiting to how we view the world. Okay, and then we get to the civilization part. Ramon Fernandez, which is such a bizarre moment. There's lots of talk, but Ramon Fernandez actually is the name of somebody who was like a critic at the time also, but we're just going to leave it as Ramon Fernandez here. It, whatever it is, it's a really odd moment, right? You've got she, Ramon Fernandez. You're like, what? Like, it was all around here, and then suddenly we get this like, specific name of like, you're like, what? Who is this guy? Ramon Fernandez, tell me if you know. Well, I would be doing the same thing. Hey, buddy, could you tell me what's going on here? Why, when the singing ended, okay, so now the song has stopped. There's an ending to the song. And we turn toward the town. Tell why the glassy lights, the lights in the fishing boats at anchor there, as the night descended, tilting in the air, and again that tilting in the air syntactically refers to night, but we know that it's supposed to refer to the boats, so he's doing that screwing thing again. Tilting in the air, mastered the night and portioned out the sea, fixing emblazoned zones and fiery poles, arranging, deepening, enchanting night. And because we only have 1 minute, I'm not going to have to walk me through this. I'm going to show you that at some point, just visually, right, they're looking back at the fishing boats in the harbor, and the lights are making almost a grid-like path, you know, because they're on the poles of the fishing boats, okay? And so that when those lights are out there, right, at these different points, that when you see a sea and it's totally dark, there's no way of having any sense of perspective on it. You can't see it at all. You're totally lost. How big is it? You have no idea. But if there are lights out there on fishing boats, all of a sudden you have perspective on how big and how wide and how large is it. And for him, that is the idea of order at a certain level, right? That the fishing boats, those lights, are somehow ordering this thing that is so vast and so large that we cannot begin to understand it, right? Oh, blessed rage for order, pale Ramon. The maker's rage to order words of the sea, words of the fragrant portal, somebody can go in this lamp, that means dimly starred, and of ourselves and of our origins in ghostlier demarcations, keener sounds. So our rage to put words in ghostlier demarcations, it's not like we're trying to get more specific, it's almost like we're trying to get more oblique somehow, yeah? What are fun? We just flew through, like, holy! I love it, but it's so hard to get through. What are your, final thoughts about those last things? Final thoughts about where you land on is religion present or not? Final thoughts about what's confusing? Yeah.
Seems like a contradiction, the words of the sea, when it said that she can't remove the sea because she uses words.
Right. So we've got contradictions even there at the end, constantly. Great. What else?
I'm just very troubled by the fact that you told us that Ramon Fernandez guy is a critic.
Oh, I shouldn't have told you that. Keep it out of your mind. I can give you like half the article here.
Because that makes me want to say that he wrote this poem to as an act against order.
Oh, an act against.
Because a critic's is purpose is to create order, mm-hmm. in a sense. I mean, just to make sense of a piece. And so it makes me feel like this poem was sort of an act
against order.
I would agree with you in the sense that though we get this blessed rage for order and an example of order at the end, what have we been experiencing the whole time we've been reading it? Ambiguity and disorder, right? We'll have a moment of order where we're like, oh, she and the sea are separate. And then three lines later, oh no, they are like, her words are the sea's words, and the sea's words are coming back to hers. And then 5 minutes later, we're on to Ramon, right? Like, we're constantly being, yes, yes.
I kind of think of it in the same sense, very different, but in the sort of same sense as the sacred ordinary. Like these okay. two ideas that can be so far apart and can be so together, you know? And so we're just playing with that throughout this poem, and we're seeing things as very separate, we're seeing them as together, and we're acknowledging, this is really hard.
Yes! Yeah. And I think, yeah. Jean, were you going to
say? No, go ahead.
I think that is, in a lot of ways, a really great place to end this, because... that we're constantly in the midst of this ambiguity, this trying to sort things out. We're constantly looking at a big, dark, vast sea and trying to see where we can little lights that might give us a map to how big or vast or where to go. But I just want you to remember, as you leave from this class and are like, I can't believe she gave us this poem, your initial responses, which was that... there was, look at how much you understood when you just listened to it and you didn't think about the content at all. And what you felt, this feeling of the waves in the rhythm of it, that underneath all of this confusingness, there was this steady rhythm of the waves that you felt, that kept going on and on through the whole thing. It was a felt thing and it was stable and sure at some level.
And calming.
Excellent. Yes, and calming. That it felt soft and gentle to be read. It didn't feel like it was harsh, intellectual, like philosophical, which is sometimes what you feel like when you start sorting out the content. But thank you for wrestling through this with me. I think it's tough, and you guys were brilliant.